Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. I'm Jonathan Egerich, and for the first time, I'm not joined by my father this week due to some inclement weather in the Midwest, tornado warnings, etc. Connecting flights were not made, and so I'm going to do something a little bit different this week. We had planned for something like this. We have a pre-recorded message that he gave in the last few years at Liberty University and at their convocation, and it's about a little over 30 minutes long, and it's entitled The Wounded Healer, and kind of the essential premise of it is God uses our past wounds as my dad shares his personal story and biographical information. And he gave that in front of many thousands of students at Liberty University in the last few years, and it was received as a powerful, powerful message. So we hope you enjoy that. And then, as always, a reminder, last week's episode was episode 42, and it was titled, What Bible Verse Gives Hopes to Millions? Jeremiah 29:11. And we've been stunned and even blown away by some of the responses we've received via email, via social media, feedback forms, etc. On that. So thank you for those who did email us. And if you didn't get a chance to check out episode 42, please go back and do that. And all 42 podcasts, which can be found at loveandrespectpodcast.com via our main website, loveandrespect.com, and iTunes and Stitcher and other RSS readers. Again, I just wanted to say thank you to all those who have left positive reviews on iTunes. I think we're close to 70 five-star reviews in iTunes. We've made it into the top 100 in the religion and spirituality category. And to those of you that have listened faithfully and have taken the time to do that, we are grateful and very honored, because that certainly helps us continue to gain traction and add to the many, many, many thousands of you who listen each week. But without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to to my dad speaking at Liberty University. Hope you enjoy this week's podcast, and trust me and my father will be back together with you next week. Take care. Bye.
Well, it is a great honor, and in talking with Johnny, we addressed my own personal story, and he felt like sharing that with you might be of encouragement to you, and so I want to do that, because there's a purpose in this, and I hope it encourages your heart. After my dad had died, I was talking with my mother, who was a widow in her 80s, and I said, Mom, I remember something. I remember Dad attempting to strangle you to death. Said he had you up against the refrigerator, and he was choking you. And I can remember running at him because I was petrified, and I was hitting him to try to get him to stop, and he knocked me down, and you were red in the face, you couldn't breathe, and then that scene ends, and then you're outside on a retainer wall near our house, and you're crying, and I'd never seen you cry, and the neighbor lady is saying, Jay, are you okay? And the scene ends. And my mother is in complete shock, and she says, there's no way you could remember that. You were too little. There is no way you could remember that. And I said, well, did it happen? She said, yes. And I remembered it. Each of us has wounds from the past. I want you to kind of think back a little bit about your own experience. Some of you have not had those experiences. Some of you have had worse. I remember when I was 11 and I saw my mom and sister talking with each other in kind of a hushed way. And I said, what are you talking about? Because I could tell they were conversing about something in a way they didn't usually converse. And they both paused, and with kind of shocked look on their face, they said, your dad is committing adultery. That day I remember something dying inside of me. Something was defiled in me. Something that was innocent was no longer innocent. That had a tremendous effect on me. My mom and dad divorced when I was one. Fortunately, they remarried each other. But then they separated for 5 or 6 years because of mom's concern about safety issues. My mother was a very successful woman and very successful and very strong personality. But she was prudent, and so she took my sister and me, just the two of us, and we moved into another home that she purchased. I can remember crying myself to sleep many a night. And I can remember just the sadness of my soul. Remember the teddy bear that I had and how I found comfort in that teddy bear. I had a flashback on that. I wet the bed until I was 11. Not that you needed to know that information. But I was eventually sent to a military school at age 13, and I was at that military academy from age 13 to 18 because there were concerns about how I was developing as a young man and the wounds that I experienced and the feelings that were within me. And a sidebar note, I remember a friend of my sister's, and I was in my 20s, moving forward a little bit, and I got a phone call from her, and I hadn't heard from her in 10 years. You know, she was my sister's friend. I just was a young kid at that time. But she calls me, and she identifies who it is, and I thought, well, yeah. And her first question to me was, is it wrong to love a man? And here I am in my 20s, and I'm thinking, why is she calling me, asking me, is it wrong to love a man? And I said to her, you and I haven't talked for years. At face value, the answer to that question is no, but you wouldn't be calling me with that question unless there's something more to this. And then there was this silence. And she said, well, he's married. So I said, you're asking me, is it wrong to love a married man? She said, yes. I said, can I ask you a question? Does he have children? She said, yes. I said, go ask each of the children if it's wrong to love him. You see, because I knew. And some of you know. You know the pain. I hardened myself, came to a point where I just basically said, I'm not going to let it matter to me. I'm going to move on. I've got my own life. And we do. We become callous. I remember when I entered Wheaton College. And I need to back up and explain how I got there. But I was talking to the chaplain about my dad, my feelings about my dad, confronting my dad. He said, you can confront your dad, and you can hurt your dad, but you won't change him. You need to let it go. That's what he told me. And that was a good word of wisdom to me at that time. But when I was at the military academy, you need to understand, we were unchurched as a family, and so we were not Christ followers. And when I was 16, at this Missouri military academy, some elder at a church had given cadets these tickets to go see a movie called For Pete's Sake by Billy Graham. I hadn't really known what this was about, but I heard the message that God was there, that he was Abba. He was Abba, and that he loved me, and that he had a purpose for my life. But that my sin separated me from that. And I needed to confess that sin, and I needed to ask Jesus Christ into my life. And I was kind of a leader among cadets, and when the invitation was given, I said, let's go. And they thought I meant out of the theater. And I started to go forward, and one of them said, Egridge, where are you going? And I was crying, and I said, I'm going to ask Christ into my life. And one of them whispered loudly, you fool! Years later, I remember that comment, you fool. And I remember thinking, if Christ isn't there, what difference does it make how foolish I am? You know, there was a song written many years ago by Peggy Lee. Is that all there is? Is that all there is? Break out the booze and let's keep dancing. You know, I was one of those, if it's all rooted in evolution, there's no ultimate meaning. And so I'm just here and it's just really without any ultimate significance. I was smart enough to figure that out. And if Christ isn't there, what difference does it make? Life is too bad to be true. But I thought if Christ really is there, then maybe I found the truth. And what difference does it make how foolish I am? Well, something happened to me that day when I asked Jesus Christ to come into my life, and something happened. In fact, when I later found out that Billy Graham had gone to Wheaton, I applied there. I didn't know anything other than that. I thought Billy and I were the only ones who kind of understood this message. And so I applied, and I wept all the way through my interview because I was so overcome by something that was happening in my soul. There was a healing taking place in this woundedness. Somehow that faith flipped a switch that brought light and power to my soul. Something happened. Something happened. And it happened enough that my mother was watching me. And she decided to join a Bible study. And at that Bible study, after several Bible studies, this woman, Helen Majeska, said, "Jay, has there ever been a time that you've received Jesus Christ into your life?" And my mother said, "No one ever asked me that question before." And she said, "Well, Jay, would you like to?" And my mother said, "I guess it wouldn't hurt." And so my mother that day prayed to receive Jesus Christ into her life, and she understood that she lived her own life independent of Christ. She said, "I haven't committed adultery. I haven't murdered anybody. I haven't robbed a bank." And the lady said, "Jay, do you believe Jesus Christ is God's Son, Lord of Lords, and King of Kings?" And she said, "Well, I guess I do. Have you lived your life independent of Him?" She said, "Yes." "You don't think that's a serious sin, Jay?" And she said, "Well, if that's how you define sin, then yeah, I'm a sinner because I've lived independently of Him. I haven't given Him any thought." And so that day, my mother acknowledged that she had hurt the heart of Christ. But what was so powerful, when I came home from school, she had the Bible open, 53 years of age, and tears are just rolling down her cheeks. And she said, "All my life, it was right here. No one ever told me about it." And she was so overwhelmed, like I was overwhelmed, that there was a healing taking place. Faith flipped a switch that brought light and power into her soul. My dad was watching this. My sister was watching this. My brother-in-law, who's a professor, was watching this. My mother, burdened for my sister, opens her heart to the truth of Christ, and my sister prays to receive Christ. Then my brother-in-law, intellectual, he hears this message, he opens his heart to Christ, and my father, who's watching my mother, the Bible teacher in this study that Mom was in, Ruby Thompson in Peoria, Illinois, needed a ride from Peoria to Chicago, and my dad volunteered to take her up. And in that three and a half hour trip, she explains the gospel to him, and my dad broke. And he opened his heart to Christ, and he used to watch Dr. Falwell Sunday after Sunday, singing. Then I found out that he was raised in a holiness church. We got letters on file where they were encouraging him to tell his son about Jesus, and my dad never said a word to me. And he expressed to me, he felt the Spirit of God skipped over him unto me because his praying mother and all the godly women, she sold her home during the Depression and gave the proceeds to some orphans there in Mitchell, South Dakota. She was a godly woman. His dad had died when he was 2 months old. And so my mom used to always say to me, "Your dad doesn't know how to be a daddy. He doesn't know how to be a daddy." But what was so encouraging to me, my mother never reduced my dad to a one-sentence descriptor that he's a no-good bum. You know, there's a huge difference between Judas and Peter, though both of them denied Jesus Christ. And my mother understood that my dad, even though he had issues, she saw the Peter in him. And Jesus Christ saw the Peter in my father. How sad it is when we profile someone as a Judas when Jesus Christ sees them as a Peter. The Spirit of God descended on my dad, and his faith flipped the light switch that brought light and power into his soul. And all of this took place my freshman year at Wheaton. And in fact, it was a revival meeting, the Spiritual Emphasis Week. I was class president of the freshman class, and one of the other leaders got up and said, this was before my whole family came to Christ. They prayed that my family would find Christ. They said, my mom, my dad, my sister, my brother, they don't know Christ. And they prayed, and that year, my freshman year, my whole family bowed the knee to Christ. If you don't think that there isn't power in this assembly when you pray for one another, would you please reconsider that? But I struggled at a certain point with whether or not God really loved me. When I came to Wheaton, the first three people I met, one was an All-American football player, another had been a concert pianist, and another had started his own radio station. And they were all National Merit Scholars. And I'm walking into the situation, I'm thinking, what did I just walk into? And then several of us decided to have this freshman uprising, and then we were threatened by the upperclassmen that you guys think you're really something. Well, that night, about 15 guys hit my room, took me out in an open field, and shaved me bald. That's why I ran for class president, because everybody could identify the bald-headed kid. But I was struggling. I was only in Christ for 24 months. But that gave me an opportunity to meet Chaplain Evan Welsh, one of the most godly men that's ever lived. And he had the worst speaking voice I've ever heard. When I first heard him in chapel, I could not believe this fog. And I'm thinking, how in the world would anybody let him be up there? And then I met him, and I never heard that voice again. And we had this freshman time away where all the students were together, and I found out that Evan, who was like 68, 69, was still doing 100 push-ups a day. He'd been the captain of the football team at Wheaton when he was there. He was just a tremendous guy. I said, Chaplain Welsh, and all these students around, Chaplain Welsh, you do everything better than me. You're smarter than me. You do more push-ups than me. You're older than me. You love people more than me. You're unbelievable. And I just come out of a military school. And this was all my new experience to Christians. This was all new to me. He grabbed me by the shoulders, and all these people standing around, and tears start going down his cheeks, and he says to me, don't you ever say that I love people more than you. You will love people far more than me. Don't you ever say that. There was such an incredible compassion that came on me. It's the only time it ever happened to me in my life that I did this. I literally could not handle what just came at me in terms of compassion. No man, no dad had ever looked at me and said, you will love people more than I will ever. No one ever looked at me with such compassion. I literally turned on my heels and walked off, and everybody thought, what in the world is wrong with him? I couldn't handle that emotion. I had never been in a situation like that. I had hardened my heart, and suddenly God came crashing through. And it was during that time, though, I was struggling, 24 months into Christ. Is God really there? Do I really know this? Does he really love me? I felt like I deserved a hand from heaven to smack me on the head, the guilt, the shame, the issues of my life. I was laying in bed. Here I am, freshman class president. I don't even know. I did a devotional on Ecclesiasticus. I had an Apocrypha Bible, the Jerusalem Bible. I didn't even know it wasn't Ecclesiasticus. I did it. And then what was so interesting, none of the Wheaton students really commented on that. They're, hey, that was a great devotional. So I thought about, well, do they know their own Bible? I was ignorant. I think they had more knowledge. But I was stupid. I didn't know so many things. I felt so inadequate. And I'm laying there in bed, and I'm thinking, do you really love me? Do you really have a purpose? All this stuff in my life. And it was like that inaudible voice said to me, if Evan Welsh, a mere man, could love you that much, would I love you less? I don't know if you've ever had a moment, but that was a moment for me. It was like heaven itself spoke to me that I, Abba, Father, love you. And then I remember Gordon Fee, one of the great Bible teachers at Wheaton, talking about Abba. There's controversy on what Abba meant, but at that time he said it was like a father would stand over the crib of the baby and say, Abba, say Abba, say Abba. And tears rolling down Dr. Gordon Fee's cheeks, and he said, this is how God feels about you. And then I remember in chapel a person talking about this mission field experience where they were ministering there, and a woman who had leprosy, who had stubs for hands, and she would collect peanuts as the only way of income, and she was decaying, and she was walking home one night when there was a church service going on, and she stopped and looked through the window, and the man was talking about the love of God and that Christ died for you and that all can come to him, all can receive him. And she went through the door, and then they said she was sobbing, and she went forward saying, even me. My heart broke because that's how I felt. Does he love even me? Is he really my Abba? Is this true truth, or is this fairy tale stuff? I made a decision that I would trust this, that I would trust this, even though my feelings did not allow me always to enter into that. I was working with a youth group, and I remember hearing this message, you know, and you probably heard it, if you were the only one here, Christ would come and die for you. And I was so overwhelmed when I first heard this, just to some of you, wow, you mean I'm that important to him, I'm worth Jesus to the Father. So I was sharing this with a youth group, and this little 13-year-old boy, after he heard me, said, yeah, you know what? What? You know what? What? If you were the only one, then that means you would have been the one that crucified him. And I paused, and I'm thinking, wow, if that's true truth, he would have come knowing that I would have stepped over his body and whacked the other nail through his other wrist, and then into the feet, and then lifted him up. I went from cheap grace to costly grace, and I was overwhelmed again. Do I really believe this? 1 Peter 2:24 says, by his wounds you are healed. You know what? The Lord has brought healing to my soul. And the Lord can bring healing to your soul. We have stuff, folks. I was the beginning in post-World War II. All my stuff took place in the 50s. Now what you're experiencing is way beyond even what I experienced. We have stuff. We have some pain. We have wounds. But Jesus Christ was wounded. He is the true wounded healer. And by his wounds we are healed. But then he says just before that, he's left us an example to follow in his steps, which means that we are little wounded healers. That some of you have wounds. And the question is, are you allowing Jesus Christ to heal those? And are you making yourself available to become a wounded healer? Johnny shared with me that his own dad had suicidal thoughts and the difficulties of being brought up in a single-parent family and the struggles of that. And I said, Johnny, are you a wounded person? Yes. Have you become that wounded healer? Yes. All of us come to a point where we're going to have to answer this question mark that's in this box. In other words, we all have an unanswered question, I should say, and it's in a box. I want you to envision that, a question mark in a box. And we ask, why? Why? Why did this happen to me? And I'm going to tell you that there are many, many, many of you here who will not receive an answer to that. I did not receive an answer to that. Johnny didn't receive an answer. There are many times, and people say, well, you shouldn't ask God why. Well, Jesus Christ on the cross asked why. My God, why? It is not unChrist-like to ask why. But there is a question mark in that box, and the Lord will not answer it. It's like the choice between Job and Job's wife. She said, curse God and die. For all the unanswered questions, why would God do this? Why are we, in effect, pawns on a chessboard, and God and Satan are making us their little game here? And she said, curse God and die. But Job did not sin with his lips. And every one of us comes to a point where we have this wound, we have this pain, we have the unanswered question. You've had death in this great university. We don't know why people were killed in a train accident. We don't understand why these things. There's no answer that we're going to receive. The question then I had asking myself is, will I trust Christ based on what I do know about him in the face of what I don't have answers to? Or will I distrust Christ based on what I do know about him in the face of the unanswered questions that I'm asking in silence is nothing else I hear from heaven? All I hear, silence. And will I protrude my lower spiritual lip and shake my fist and kind of pout before God and demand that he answer these questions? Or will I say, not my will, but thy will be done. And oh God, through Christ, I surrender. I ask you to bring healing to my woundedness. There was a medical doctor who needed to amputate the two legs of a soldier. And when the soldier awakened on his bed, the medical doctor was there, and he explained to the soldier what happened. And the soldier just was irate and screamed at the doctor and just was hostile to the doctor and just, you know, was in a fit of rage. And the doctor said, I understand. And the guy said, you don't understand. The doctor stood up and pulled up his pant legs and had two artificial limbs and said, I do understand. I will tell you this, that the wounds you're experiencing have a purpose because there are people that you will come across who need to know that somebody understands. Every time I see a little boy cry, my heart is broken. My son was in New York and he was working with a little league team and a little boy on the field lost one of his lenses to his glasses. And the father who arrived was in a drunken stupor and realized his boy had broken his glasses and went out into the center field and busted the boy right in the mouth. And the boy went down. Everybody standing around and my son ran out there. Little boy there, dad just staggers off. The little boy just ripped himself and he sat up and he would not cry. Because he'd done a bad thing when you're 8 years of age. And everybody must feel that I'm really bad. My son embraced him. He said, we love you. We love you and it's okay. It's okay. It's all right. It was an accident. We'll find the lens. And the little boy broke and started blubbering and convulsing and sobbing. And when my son told me that, I could not contain my tears. It is a story that I empathize with. But it has allowed me to come alongside of a person like that later in life and say, I understand. Look at my legs. You are at a point where you can shake your fist and say, why am I in this situation? Why, God, why? Or you can say, these are wounds. And I will tell you that the external evil that came to you cannot defile your inner person. That's a choice you make. Where there is sin, grace abounds, Paul says. And God is working all things together for good, meaning they ain't so good right now. And Joseph said, the evil you brothers intended for me, God is planned for good. And I had to meditate on those verses and say, do I really believe that's true, or am I deceiving myself? And I made a choice that I'm going to trust Christ on the basis of what I do know about him in the Gospels and not be pouting and saying, why? Why was it that I had to experience these things? And allowed him to begin to do something. That's why Paul says in 2 Corinthians that the God of all comfort, who will comfort with us in all of our afflictions in order that, so that we can comfort those in their afflictions. Will I allow myself to be a conduit, or will I begin to say, you know what? I resent the fact that I was afflicted in the first place. Paul does not answer why we were afflicted in the first place. He only says that you will be a source of comfort to those who are being afflicted on the heels of your own comfort, on the heels of your own afflictions. And we have to come to a point of full surrender. But don't deprive yourself of a life message. Some of you have no idea how God intends to turn this around. You will come to a moment when you will be overwhelmed with gratefulness to God that he has somehow made you into this wounded healers just like Jesus. And you will see a power, and you will see an effect, and that little 8-year-old boy will be healed because of you. He will be healed because of you. Do not deprive yourself of this. Or will you be like Job's wife and shake your fist toward heaven because you have it worse than the others who are around you? Don't you see this may be God's gift to you? He's not the author of sin, but he will use that sin to bring about a greater grace. You will receive a greater grace than the person who was not sinning or who was righteous in the first place. This was what was so antagonistic. Gospel message. The Jews hated what Paul was saying. God is about to do something with people who don't deserve it, and they are going to receive a grace that's beyond anything they could imagine. Let me ask you this question. Young woman, have you been sexually abused? Evil has come to you, but you make the choice whether you're going to let that evil defile your spirit. I don't know why it happened. I can't answer that. Young man, why your older friends exposed you to pornography, and so now there's an addiction that you'll have the rest of your life. Just like an alcoholic, you can't go into a tavern. And you can look back and say, God, why did you allow that? You can ask that question. Every one of us has an unanswered question. There is the box, and you're going to have to say, I'm going to trust God to work outside the box. Oh, God, work outside the box. And he will work all around that box. I pastored in an academic community, East Lansing, Michigan State University. Many professors even who are Christ followers would come to me, and intellectual people think they can ask this question of God that he himself can't answer. It's not that he can't answer it. He won't answer it. And I've said to so many, we just need to get down on our knees and give God an opportunity to work outside the box. It has been amazing to me that those who have softened their heart and let go of the unanswered question and allowed God to work outside of the box, it just starts happening. You're going to have to put your toe in the water on that and see if that's not true. And in his kindness, he'll be gentle and gracious to you. He'll be patient with you. But what I'd like you to think with me for a moment is just about your own story. What is your story? Have you said, Lord Jesus, I want you to use this so that I can be a means of healing? Or will you say, you know, the impropriety of this is staggering to me, God. And you know what? Frankly, I feel the injustice is so severe that, you know what? I actually resent you. I'm really mad at you. But he's Abba. And that's why I had to come to grips with the fact, is there incongruity between the love of Abba Father and the sufferings that one experiences? Where are you on that? I would just invite you to pray with me, because I am excited about what some of you are about to begin to experience. That He has a life message through you. Have you thought about how He's going to take that sin and bring about a greater grace? How He's going to use that wound to bring healing to other wounded people? But are you willing to live a whole life with Him never answering now why it happened in the first place? Let's open our hearts to the Spirit of Christ, and let's ask Him to use our wounds of the past. Would you join me in praying? Lord, through the years, I've met with so many students in that great college town, East Lansing. And so I know their hearts, and I know their tenderness, and I know their aspirations and their longings. Each of us has a sense of destiny. And yet things have happened to us that have, we felt, taken us off the tracks, that maybe were damaged goods. And if people really knew how, not only the evil that had come to us, but the choices to do evil that we have entered into, the shame that we experience. And we've let these defeats now defeat us, and we keep up a good mask, but deep in our hearts, we really don't believe You're for us. We really don't believe that You are going to take this and shower us with overwhelming love and grace in such a way that we suddenly begin to see a fruitfulness in our life that we could only have imagined. Lord, I pray that You use these sufferings of this individual. Hear their prayer now as they ask You to take these wounds and use them and make them into the wounded healer. For the 8-year-old little boys who are in the open field, having been hit in the face and don't know how to interpret life. Or the little boy who saw his dad attempt to strangle his mother. Or for the person who heard that a parent is committing adultery. Sexual molestation, or any number of things that have come. Oh God, through Jesus Christ, may we be reminded that You're going to use this for a greater grace. Let me end with this. If you look at me, this is a choice you make. I remember hearing about a Frenchman during the Nazi regime who was a Christ follower, and he was harboring Jews. And then one day, this Frenchman, this Christ follower, was exposed and brought before a Nazi officer known as the torturer. And when he came before this Nazi officer, the peace of Christ descended upon this Frenchman. You know, the peace of Christ, my peace I give to you, not as the world do I give to you. This Nazi saw that peaceful look and tranquility, he interpreted as snideness and smirkiness. And he screamed at him, "Don't you know who I am? Get that snide look off your face." And the Frenchman looked up and said, "Yes, sir, I know who you are. You are a Nazi, and you are known as the torturer. I've heard of you, and you have the authority to torture me, and you have the authority to kill me. But, sir, you do not have the power to get me to hate you." Remember when Jesus said, they smack you on the right cheek, turn the left? Are we milquetoast? No, because when you turn the left cheek, you take over spiritual authority. When He said they take 1 mile, go the second, why? Because we're milquetoast? No, because when you do that, you take over authority. But here's the this is Liberty Theater. What is it? Liberty University. What does this mean? It means that you are free. And these past evils will not make you evil. That's your choice. This can actually lead to holiness and wisdom and insight. You can begin to be a person you had no idea you could be because of the sin that's come to you. But it's your choice. What happened to you? What your dad did? You can confront your dad. You can hurt your dad. But you won't change him. The issue here is you can't control the outcomes of others. You can only control your own actions and reactions. But what you need to understand is that you are free. And you're the one that makes a decision of whether you're going to let that defilement enter into your soul or keep it out and allow that thing to turn you into that wounded healer. It's your choice. Choose wisely.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect podcast. For more information and additional products,
go to loveandrespect.com
and follow us on Twitter,
Facebook,
and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.